Hi, we're Josh
and Arielle Wamsley,
owners of Green Valley Tree LLC, based in North Windham.
We're proud to sponsor Connecticut East this week and to serve the communities of Windham and New London counties with our tree removal and plant healthcare services.
Visit our website at greenvalleytreeworks.com for a full list of our services or give us a call on 860-234-4041. We look forward to hearing from you.
Finding out the state of manufacturing in Connecticut, we talk with Ari Santiago, host of Made in America. COVID-19 may still be around. We talk with award-winning personal trainer Mike Penta about staying fit and healthy. Plus, a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. Connecticut has always had a rich history when it comes to manufacturing, and despite stories telling us otherwise about the demise of the manufacturing industry in this country, Connecticut is still manufacturing more than you may think. Ari Santiago is the CEO of IT Direct, a Connecticut-based IT solutions company whose clients are predominantly in the manufacturing space, and he's also the host of the podcast Made in America. I caught up with Ari recently to find out more. Ari, welcome to Connecticut East This Week.
Hey, Brian. Thanks so much for having me on. Really appreciate you giving me the time.
IT Direct, next year, 2022, I believe, is 20 years that you've been in business. I'm guessing COVID has probably sort of like made you a little bit busier as well, hasn't it?
I mean, it's a once-in-a-century pandemic, so I think interesting is the most polite word we could all use for it. I think we've been fortunate in some cases, certainly at least from a business perspective, that what we do, IT Direct, meaning helping businesses enable their success through technology, has only been enhanced and the need for it heightened during this time. So from that perspective, it's been good for us.
Explain to us, if you would, sort of like the elevator pitch. You're an IT solutions company. What does that mean to us in the real world?
Yeah, it's a great question, Brian. We like to think of ourselves as what we call a technology success provider. And so what does that mean? So, you know, businesses with, say, 25 to 500 employees rely so heavily on information technology. We have a big presence in manufacturing here in Connecticut. I'm actually on the board of the Eastern Advanced Manufacturers Alliance, or EMA. IT is critical, whether it's video conferencing, email, file shares, proposals, sales, in the manufacturing world, production. Everything's happening on the computer, right? Effective, efficient, secure, and reliable, both IT advice and IT infrastructure is just imperative in today's business world. And IT Direct helps those businesses marry their business needs to the technology that you have. And so you could think of IT Direct as your IT department, from your CIO role, strategy, planning, and execution, all the way down to the help desk where we answer calls when you need something fixed.
We all know absolutely how important having good IT is in this day and age. But like I said, you're 20 years old next year. What would you say are some of the biggest changes you've seen over those 20 years?
Well, one of the funny stories, Brian, that I tell is when I first started IT Direct, as you alluded to, 2002, it was January 30th, 2002. One of the things I recall from the early days is people telling me, why would I ever need to get email on my phone? Isn't email enough when I get it at the office and check it a couple times a day? And I think it's funny. I think about that a lot because it's just so anachronistic. I mean, who now doesn't have email, video texting, and everything on their phone? So it's changed dramatically. And where IT sort of was really part of the back office, it's now part of everything from introduction, sales, and marketing down to service delivery and post-delivery support. Everything is digitized. Everything's online. So it's changed quite a bit.
Now, another thing about your organization, your company, is that you have a particular bent towards the manufacturing sector. You yourself have a big interest in manufacturing. You said at the top of this interview, you also sit on a board as well to do with manufacturing. Where's that interest come from?
You know, I think it has to do with sort of, you know, two things. Just I grew up in Connecticut, and driving through Connecticut growing up, I have a lot of family in Connecticut. And so we would spend time, I'd go to Thanksgiving in Ansonia, drive down Route 8. I looked at Conn College in Eastern Connecticut. So spent time, over there, went to the beach over there. So, we've been all over north, south, southeast, all over Connecticut for various things. And everywhere you go, the remnants of our industrial past were everywhere. And I just became very romantic, whether it was the coal building on I-91 or any number of mills along the river. I became very romantic about manufacturing as a kid and always liked to play with my hands. And when I got older, IT Direct was founded in Parkville, in Hartford, where my apartment was at the time. And so we were working out of my apartment. Our first office was in a converted manufacturing building right across from the old Royal Typewriter factory. And so that kind of continued. And once I realized later on that, number one, manufacturing in Connecticut didn't die. It just moved out of the old brick downtown buildings into industrial parks in the suburbs. And we were still making tremendous things here in Connecticut and contributing not only to the local economy, but to the global economy, and the innovation continued. I was really inspired by that. And so the need for IT and manufacturing grew. And so I saw the opportunity to sort of take that romantic history of Connecticut and marry it with my 21st century kind of feelings. And so we started serving manufacturers, and it's been a great joy to be able to feel that linkage to the past, the present, and the future.
You've taken it one step further as well, because you have a very successful podcast. You are the host of it. It's called Made in America with Ari Santiago. Why did you decide to step into the broadcasting world as well?
You know, Brian, it's funny. It's sort of two reasons. One is, being in the space of serving manufacturers, I knew how exciting the space was. I saw how innovative, how high tech, and how high growing, and how the number one thing from the mid 2010s until the beginning of the pandemic, every manufacturer, if you ask them what their top three challenges were, would probably tell you the same top three things: workforce, workforce, and workforce. The demand was there. They always said Connecticut manufacturing are jobs in search of people and not the other way around. And so when I would go around and start talking to people, I found that the zeitgeist in the regular community was that that was not the case in manufacturing. That, as we like to say, people still thought of manufacturing as the dark, dirty, dingy days of the past, instead of the lean, green, and clean jobs of the future. And so the more I would talk to people about it, the more I found kind of resistance from the standard channels to pick up on the story. And as a true entrepreneur, when you see a problem that no one wants to solve, you roll up your sleeves and solve it yourself. And so at some point, I think someone challenged me and said, Ari, if you think it's so easy to find all these great stories, why don't you go and do it? And so I did. I decided to start this Made in America with Ari Santiago podcast, which was focused on Connecticut manufacturing with two key goals, Brian. One is to share in the great things that were happening in manufacturing, to help the larger community realize what a vibrant, exciting place it was to be. And the second goal was to provide a platform for manufacturing leaders to learn and grow from each other. We agreed we were going to do one episode a week for 52 weeks, and it just became so much fun and so exciting and such a labor of love. We've kept it going, and we'll be coming up on 2 years pretty soon.
One of the other things about, doing a podcast and getting that information out there, and of course using all of the technology to reach those new audiences, are you surprised how people have reacted, one, to the podcast, and two, did they realize there was that much manufacturing still going on in the state?
No, well, see, goal number one, to change people's minds. They did not know. And I think two reactions have been there, much more so than I expected, but I am thrilled by both of them. You know, one is people in the manufacturing space being so supportive, giving of their time, helping me to connect to more and more people, to tell more and more stories, and just so appreciative that we're getting the word out. So that's just feeling appreciated always feels good, Brian. And so it's just been so rewarding for so many people to be so appreciative of it. And the second one is endless numbers of people that have sent me private LinkedIn messages or bumped into me in the restaurants or bars when that used to be a common thing, who would just say to me, I had no idea. Friends from high school that were like, I didn't even know this was still happening. And, people that I'd be normally connected to on Facebook and LinkedIn. So it's been a surprise in some ways, but also rewarding, because I knew it was there. And I knew that if we just told the story, people would latch onto it. I couldn't be the only one that was misinformed, and I couldn't be the only one who'd be excited to find out the truth. And so I'm glad to find out both those things were true. People didn't know, and when they find out, they're really excited about it.
I think another thing about Connecticut, and this has happened with me as well, being in broadcasting and doing, you know, this podcast and speaking to people, is when you travel around and, you know, despite COVID-19 restrictions, that you find some of these organizations in the smallest of towns that you would never expect, almost in the back of beyond, and they're doing some real high-tech stuff.
I mean, Brian, that's been such a joy. There's so many companies alive and well. The people who did think that manufacturing still existed in Connecticut basically thought it was one of three things. You're either building submarines, you're building jet engines, or you're doing helicopters. And the misnomer, I think, was that it was, you know, primarily defense related. And the reality is that there's so much more, to your point. There's so much cool stuff. You know, there's thousands of people making the devices, the machines that make computer chips that go into iPhones and Android phones right here in Connecticut. There's innovative small businesses that make, you know, niche products like, you know, such as Zendex Tool that makes this great little product that helps you jack up a car and roll it around with the push of a finger. Automotive, I mean, medical devices, just tremendous in Connecticut. There's a battery, charging stations for electric cars, tons of parts that go into Tesla, lots of stuff, SpaceX, space travel. There's so much stuff here in Connecticut that people don't know about. It's just really exciting.
I think one of the other things that I saw recently as well, which, you know, again, surprised me, but was also great to see, is that we've got some of the, you know, not quite so high tech manufacturing here still, which is still just as important. And the story was about a manufacturer in Eastern Connecticut that actually has created storage devices so that things like the COVID-19 vaccine can be transported and kept at the temperature it needs to be kept at. And that just blew my mind.
Absolutely. You know, and Brian, I think that touches on another thing, which is a theme that we've seen over and over again, is the innovation that's here in Connecticut. And I think, you know, there's just so much, for such a small state, right? I mean, our population isn't even the same as, say, the Houston metro area. We're also smaller in geography. And there's just so much exciting stuff here. And you touched on it. I think Eastern Connecticut has so much exciting stuff going on. It's not just boat building in Eastern Connecticut. You know, there is plastic, there's storage containers. You know, there's just a lot of innovation all around Connecticut.
What fires you up and keeps you going?
On a personal note, I think what fires me up is my family. You know, I really, I'm very blessed to have a wonderful wife and two kids, a daughter and a son. And it just always inspires me to keep going, to just help build the future for them that I really want. And, you know, the other thing really, Brian, is to contribute. You know, I was really blessed and fortunate that I grew up with a family that prize not only individual achievement, but our contribution to make the place that we live and the community around us even better. And I just see such an opportunity and such a tremendous opportunity to help contribute to the growth of such a great community, which is what, you know, Connecticut really is. And so, you know, when I see that opportunity to do something, it just inspires me to be able to do it every single day. So I think those are the two things that really bring me joy and energy.
I'm just going to put you on the spot once again.
Please.
This is like the $64 million question. Out of all of the interviews that you've done to date for your podcast, what surprised you the most? What particular stories that like really, surprised you?
Wow, surprised me. You know, I would probably have to flip the question around a little bit. And I think what's been the biggest sort of aha moment, the biggest learning, is how giving everyone in the manufacturing community is in Connecticut to each other and to the larger community. I think there's often a misnomer, a misunderstanding in business, and I don't know where it's come from, but that number one, you know, business is this dog-eat-dog world where every person or every business is out for itself, and that all they care about is, you know, maximizing for themselves at the expense of their competitors and at the expense potentially of the community around them. And I never felt that way, and I knew a bunch of people of my peer, especially of my age group, that didn't feel that way. But it's been so refreshing and rewarding to talk to manufacturers and manufacturing businesses of all sizes. You know, some that are literally five or six people and some that are tens of thousands. And to find that engagement with employees, helping them to grow, engagement in the community, really caring that we leave behind a world that's better than how we found it is pervasive amongst all of the companies, and that they're willing to work together to help make that happen. And listen, of course, there's competition on some levels in some areas, but understanding that it's really bigger than that, and that the things that bind us together are really greater than the things that drive us apart. It's been so rewarding and refreshing to see that to a person, everyone that's been on the podcast feels that way, off camera, on camera, or off air, on air, whatever you want to say. And that's been so rewarding, Brian. And we talked about what brings me energy. I think that also feeds it. Knowing that there's so much positivity out there to find and share, that also is a big motivator.
Your passion is absolutely infectious. It's been great talking to you, Ari. And of course, the most important thing is, where can we find and listen and watch the podcast?
Podcast is available anywhere you get your normal podcasts. You certainly can go to the podcast website, which is madeinamericawithari.com.
Ari Santiago, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you for sparing us your time, and thanks for coming on to Connecticut East this week.
Absolutely my pleasure, Brian. Thanks so much for having it on, and thanks for what you do, bringing more information to Eastern Connecticut and helping that part of the state shine. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Staying fit and healthy is something we should all be striving to do, but with COVID-19 still very much around, how can you stay fit when gyms and fitness centres have occupancy restrictions, and also, are they safe? I spoke with Mike Penta, owner and trainer at Waterford Fitness and Training. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Brian.
New year, new you. It's that sort of like old cliche, but of course we've got COVID-19 hanging around us still. How's that affected not only you as a business owner, but people coming to the gym?
Yeah, it's definitely, this year is a crazy, crazy year, because last year we got the beginning of it, the whole new year, new me thing. So we didn't really shut down until March, or we didn't have any problems until March. It's been pretty crazy this year because, again, people are still afraid to leave their houses, but we have to adapt. And I think that it's important for people to understand that just because there are restrictions and because, you know, maybe you can't go to a gym or you can't go somewhere, you still have to move. I think that's the most important thing that I want people to understand, is you can't just stop doing everything, because we saw what happened the entire year last year when people stopped doing everything. A lot of people struggled significantly with their weight, put on weight. They weren't feeling well. They were getting, you know, not just getting injured, but like little nagging pains were starting to happen. And that's because people were less active than they ever were before. So with the new year, new me, and in the beginning of the year, I think it's important that people at least start moving. You know, whether they come to a gym or they go anywhere, just start moving, start doing something, get outside, go for a walk, you know, do some maybe air squats, sit-ups and push-ups. You don't have to go all in all the time. You just got to do something to keep the body active. We were never meant to be isolated. As far as business, I mean, I think every business is struggling. I mean, I'd be lying if I said we weren't, you know, definitely trying to grind it out like everybody else. I mean, we're not making massive strides. I mean, this is the beginning of the year where gyms in general make all their money. January, February, March, April, May, right before the summertime, you know, we make a lot of money during that time. It holds us over for the whole year, because towards the end of the year, people, you know, aren't joining gyms as frequently. And you still get those cancellations that happen all the time, right? So you have, you know, attrition, people drop out. So when you lose the entire beginning of the year, when you get a lot of your new members, but then all of a sudden people still keep dropping out at the same rate that they would normally drop out, you know, you don't have the growth that you normally would have. It's definitely a struggle. We're going to lose the beginning of this year again. It is what it is. It's part of life, and you can't sit there and complain about it. If you complain about it, you're just going to get passed by. So, you know, it's important as an entrepreneur to remind yourself, you just, you know, keep doing what you can, keep working hard, and, you know, just keep moving forward.
A lot of doctors late last year, when COVID started to spike, were basically saying they wanted to see gyms shut down. And of course, the governor did make a move. He didn't shut you down, but he reduced you from 50% capacity down to 25% capacity. And then obviously the wearing of masks. I mean, do you accept the comments that were made by doctors, that they felt that, you know, gyms were actually one of the biggest health risks?
I don't think there was enough data out there. I don't think there's enough data out there of any of this. You know, I mean, I think there's more and more data as we start to move along this path, but I don't think there was enough data out there. A lot of what's going on right now is just a reaction to try to mitigate as much as they can. I understand. I wouldn't want to be in any of their shoes. But again, I think that what we've learned about this virus, and I think it's pretty apparent, is the healthier you are, the better chance you have of, you know, having a full recovery and not having too many issues, or I guess, I would say, long-term effects of the virus, you know. So, again, I think that's what we're learning now. So I think that saying that, you know, gyms were causing a lot of the problems, I don't know. I mean, we had a small spike here, which was like 7 or 8 total people. We have 400 members. I think it was down to 8 people. And not only that, but we were able to, you know, anytime someone has ever gotten it in here, we were able to call everybody and trace everybody and keep everybody out and make sure people were getting their tests done to kind of trace it and keep it as small as possible. And we were able to do that. I think all small businesses can do that. The businesses that can't do that are large businesses, you know? So that's the one thing I don't understand about like all this being, you know, shut down with small businesses, is because again, small businesses can have a better hold of what's going on in their businesses. You know, they know the people that are coming in all the time. They're pretty comfortable with that. And they talk with people all the time. And in larger businesses, you're just walking in and out and you never know what happens in those types of places. So I think the spread is worse in larger places than smaller businesses, because you can't control it in a large place, but you can't control it. Like I said, we've had cases in here. I'm not going to lie that we didn't say that we didn't have cases. We've had cases, but we were able to control those cases and keep people safe, you know.
You were, in fact, voted best trainer of 2020 by the Day Reader's Choice Awards last year. So congratulations on that. So obviously, as best trainer, what are some of this, like, the factors that people use as excuses, you know, really, other than COVID, of course, you know, to not actually do exercise? And what can they do to get over that?
But yeah, the excuses are always the same time. I mean, people always say they don't have time, they don't have time, they don't have time. And now it's very easy when someone's sitting in front of me, I say, hey, let me see your phone real quick. And I kind of look at their screen time. And then I say, listen, I'm just going to show you something. Look how much time you waste just being on your phone, on your screen time, sometimes 3-4 hours a day. You can find 20 minutes a day to exercise. I think time is, here's what COVID did for me. It kind of reaffirmed and let me know that, yeah, everybody has the time. Because when people had the time, they were locked up, they weren't able to do anything, they still weren't exercising. So they have the time, and that's always the biggest one we get, is I don't have time, I'm busy, my kids, my family, my this, that, and the other thing. But I think I don't know if it's an excuse anymore. I try to say, you know, maybe it's not an excuse. Maybe they just don't know. They're not educated enough, because they're sitting there and saying, I don't have time to go to the gym. I don't have time to, you know, go out and do this. When if we educate the public, and this is what I try to do, and I own a gym, and I'd love for people to come to my gym. But my goal is to get people to understand they just need to move. Like, you have time to move for 10 to 15 minutes a day. You can do it at your house. You can go for a walk. So I think that's the biggest thing. And if anyone's listening to this and they're sitting there saying, oh, I don't have time to go work out. Like I said, most people are saying they don't have time to go to the gym, but you have time to work out. You can find time in your day to move and exercise.
I think that is the big thing, isn't it? Because I think when we think about doing so, like fitness and keeping fit, we feel that we have to do it like for an hour or something, and really like a 30-minute walk is still good fitness. It's just about, you know, keep doing it, not just like, oh, I'll do it one day and then not do it for another 5, isn't it really?
Yeah, doing something is always better than nothing. And granted, of walking every day for 20 minutes going to do something for you? Is it going to be enough for you? Absolutely not. So you definitely need to push yourself a little bit, get a little more, you know, intense, maybe go for more of a brisk walk. You got to get the heart rate up, right? So like, exercise is good for your heart, first and foremost. Is yes, aesthetically, people want to look a certain way, but you've got to feel better, right? You've got to make sure that you have good heart health, and you have to get exercise in for that. After that, aesthetically, if you want to look good, awesome. We can do a lot for you. And there's a lot of adjustments you can make to your nutrition and the types of workouts that you do. But first and foremost, like, the goal is to get people to just be healthy. 68% of Americans right now, it's almost 70% now, are overweight. It's like 49% of Americans are actually obese, which is insane, right? So, I mean, we rely on so much medication today to kind of keep us going. Most people don't realize if you just put a little bit of effort in, you'll be able to save yourself a lot of money in the long run with your healthcare, and you'll feel so much better. So again, it's just about showing up and doing something. Yes, you have to push yourself a little bit, but doing something is better than nothing. So just starting off, if you're gonna, you know, do anything, start off at 5 minutes. Then move to 10 minutes maybe the next week. Then move to 15 and 20. Then it becomes a routine. Then you want to start doing it more because you start feeling better. And that's how habits start, and that's how you change your behavior. So
tell us briefly a little bit about this 21-day challenge that you've introduced, because I actually did it with you and, you know, I got some really good results. So it clearly does work.
So our 21-day challenge, which we went from a 30 days of victory program that I've created. I'm actually working on writing a book on it. you know, that's down the road. But our 21-day challenge, it takes time to start to develop good habits. And 21 days is a good enough time frame where people aren't too stressed out about trying to do something, right? It's a manageable amount of time. And when we're trying to change someone's habits and behaviors, and that's the whole thing with health and fitness, and I try to explain that, that's the first and foremost. You have to change, learn how to change your habits and behavior and get your mindset right, or diet and exercise isn't going to work for you, right? So with the 21 days, it's all about trying to help you change your habits and behaviors. 21 days is a manageable amount of time for somebody where they're not going to get stressed out. It's not 8 weeks, 12 weeks down the road. So it's 21 days. And what we do is we work with you on your nutrition, your exercise, and your mindset, developing new habits, new behaviors, right? There's a lot of things you have to do to develop habits and behaviors. You just can't say you're going to do something and expect it to happen. You have to take specific steps to do that. So what we do is really work hard on goal setting, setting up SMART goals, you know, chipping away at specific things, reaching, you know, setting short-term milestones to try to get to those long-term goals. But it really breaks down to trying to be successful each day for 21 days. If you focus on one day at a time, like I said, just a few, you know, go exercise a little bit each day, it's going to turn over to a long-term habit for you. Same thing with what we're trying to do with our 21-day challenges. Each day, we're going to focus on things to try to make you a little bit better each day so that all of a sudden, after 21 days, you're feeling better. You're starting to see a little bit of results. Again, you're not going to see unbelievable results in 21 days. That's not the goal. The results are to help you get into the change your habits and behaviors, get into a routine so that you can make this long term. The problem is everyone says new year, new me. But after 14 days, most people quit. And that's actually the average that people quit on their New Year's resolutions within 14 days. So our goal with anything all the time that we run these challenges is to get you to make this a lifelong habit and commitment to yourself, because you only have one body for the rest of your life and you've got to treat it the best you can.
Mike Penta, owner and trainer of Waterford Fitness and Training, as always, it's great to talk to you and thanks for giving us the heads up on how we can have a healthier us if we put our minds to it. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Brian.
Green Valley Tree LLC is proud to sponsor Connecticut East This Week. Contact Green Valley Tree LLC for all your tree removal and plant health care needs and more. Find us at greenvalleytreeworks.com or call 860-234-4041.
Time now for a look at some of the other stories making the headlines in the region recently. In the Connecticut Examiner this week, for high school seniors dealing with the fallout of a pandemic, college financial aid applications sometimes end up on the back burner. It's not just Connecticut. National data shows that the number of completed federal applications for free student aid are down 11.4% as of January 1st in comparison to January of the previous year. In the day this week, the United States Coast Guard has already marched in President Joe Biden's inaugural parade. Well, sort of. The band was marching across the Washington Parade Field at the U.S. Coast Guard Academy in New London recently to make a recording to be included in the virtual inauguration parade for Biden on January 20th. In the Norwich Bulletin this week, Russell Gray, the long-serving first selectman of Stirling, has died. Gray, a former dairy farmer turned local politician, passed away at the William W. Backers Hospital in Norwich after a brief illness. Gray was just 76 years old. In the Middletown Press, as Connecticut restaurants and other businesses cash in checks for up to $20,000 from the state, Governor Lamont's economic development chief said he expects the newest federal infusion to result in as much as $3.5 billion in assistance for companies able to obtain it. More than 64,000 Connecticut businesses were approved for $6.7 billion under the program last year, amounting to just over $100,000 each. And in next week's Connecticut East This Week, the new legislative session is well underway with the potential for sports betting and marijuana to possibly become legalized in the state. We take a listen again to Governor Lamont's State of the State address to find out more. Plus, new London Mayor Michael Passero has broken his silence about his feelings on the Connecticut Port Authority and their state peer deal, saying he and the City of New London need a better deal that will compensate the city and pay property taxes. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East, where you can also listen to the show again on demand. And please like, follow and share on your social media platforms too. I'm Brian Scott-Smith. Thank you for listening.